This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Celtic Now and for our podcast. My name is Ryan Clifford. Well, with a good podcast this week, Robert. Big guest. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be cracking. Really, really funny guys, so we're really happy to have him on.
Definitely, mate. It's a big guest for us, Robert. A lot of views on the old YouTube, Instagram. Funny guy. Obviously, with the accent, we'll know he's Irish. Absolutely brilliant. Sir Steve Timothy, how's things, mate?
Hello. I'll just counter in there. You said a very funny guy. I'll just say allegedly. No one knows this for sure. Allegedly. I'm good. Enjoying the lovely sunshine. So, yeah, it's great.
Well, I mean, Robert, you're absolutely funny. So, if that's all it means, then that's all it means, mate.
I'll take that.
But as she says, the beautiful weather, and obviously, we're in, as we spoke before we come on, it's lockdown. We're all kind of a bit doom and gloom at the moment, but a bit of sunshine, it's a bit of positivity.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. It's just great to get out, and it's great to, you know, even sit in the garden and have a cup of tea. It's just nice. And you can feel normal again. There's people walking around. It feels relatively normal. So it's nice.
As Steve says, Robert, a bit of sunshine. Obviously, Glasgow, for a change, it's sunny. So we're all happy.
Yeah, definitely, Ryan. It's funny weather in Glasgow. It only happens once.
I think Glasgow is very similar to Galway.
Yeah. When the sun comes out, everybody appears.
Say that again.
Once the sun comes out, everybody appears that you've not seen them about a year.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I forget, even stay close to you. You're like, oh, I've not seen him in a year.
Crawl out of his hole.
As you say, Steve, a lot of kind of your comedy stuff. How's it been, obviously, through what's been happening at the moment? Obviously, you've got a tour coming up next year. Have you been just kind of planning new material for that? And just how's it really affected your comedy side?
It's kind of affected everything. Obviously, we were in the middle of a tour. We had to cancel that. So, no, I don't. It's been about 13 months now since I did a live show. So that's just crazy in itself. Like, little did we think back at this, you know, that time early in 2020, it'd end up like wrote off and probably a very large portion of 21. And especially my tour is not kicking off till January 2022. So that's, it's just mad to think about that. Yeah, and I suppose I've kind of, I had a lot of issues with Facebook because my stuff was being misconstrued as hate speech and stuff, which was just pathetic, and had a lot of issues with them. So my page is restricted. So you're kind of indifferent then about doing sketches because you're thinking, but not my fan base isn't going to see them. Mm-hmm. So why am I putting effort into doing this good, what I think would be a funny sketch, and throw it up Facebook if only 10,000 people will see it? So you're almost kind of disillusioned in a way. But yeah, I've been kind of like, I've been, you know, as always when you do sketches and things, you're always kind of thinking, when is the time to kill the character, or when is the time to introduce another one? And you don't ever know when to do that because you play with ones and people are going like, go back to doing Farmer Michael. And then if you do Farmer Michael, they're going like, you need to come up with new material. So you're like, what the fuck do you want? You know, like, what do you want from me? So yeah, I've been kind of like, I'm always thinking and teetering around with thoughts in my head. So yeah, it remains to be seen what kind of path I'll go down yet, but we'll see.
It's actually quite, it's funny you say that, Robert, isn't it? Because a lot of people when it comes to comedy, obviously, as it goes along, people might go, oh, I don't want that. But as Steve says, when the changes, go back to that. So it's kind of, you're kind of catch 22.
Yeah,
I get that. See, on that, Steve, you're saying that. How does comedy being like, as like comedy for 10 years ago to now is completely different? Like, you need to watch everything you say. How do you feel with that? Have you been comedy for many a years? Has it changed? Did you have to change with the times?
Well, I only started like 6-odd years ago, so it hasn't been a huge change for me. I kind of always was always seen as controversial, even though I don't see it as controversial at all. Like, I'm playing a character. It's parody. I'm using satire. I'm using exaggeration. I take the, like, especially when I'm doing something, say, about race or whatever, I take my opponent's position and then exaggerate it to the sense, to the state of ridiculousness. So, like, some people can't see what I'm doing, other people can, but I suppose that's the nature of the game, isn't it? You're always going to be misconstrued by someone. You know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, especially in the 21st century, Steve.
Yeah. Like you say, they're gays. That's enough to get some people started, you know what I mean? And you can't win.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's anything. It's anything in life now, you can't see anything now. A lot of people are, can I give you all, you can't say that, and they report your stuff. But for me, comedy's brilliant because it's a way to obviously express yourself, express your act. And I don't see, for me personally, you pay money to go and listen to it, and then you go away and you laugh and joke about it. So I totally understand why you've got to watch it the same, but it shouldn't be like that, in my opinion. Just comedy's comedy, and it's a laugh and a joke. Once you leave that, that's it.
Yeah, I'm in kind of two minds about it. Obviously, I'm not one of these people that say you should be able to say anything anytime. No, of course not. That's ridiculous. You know, you can't come out and say some words or some things just because you feel like it. But you can make a joke about that topic if it's carefully crafted enough. You can make, like, I done the one about Black Lives Matter, and I was on Irish radio half the morning defending it. But a load of the African Irish community rang in defense because they seen what I was trying to do. I was basically taking the position of a white Southern guy that said, like, sure, slavery was good for black people. Slavery was good for them. Because, look, they got to live over here in the beautiful United States. You know what I mean? So I was taking that stupid position that, sure, if we didn't take them as slaves, they wouldn't be living such a good life, as if that is an excuse for something. And I was kind of thrown in the old, like, sure, you know, who wouldn't want to live in a rundown area of South Detroit or whatever? You know what I mean? So you're thrown in these little digs, like, what's, obviously some people kind of misconstrued it and I was attacked a bit, but you're going to get that, as I said, you know.
But I think that's in general, Robert, isn't it? A lot of people do misconcept comedy for what it actually is. It's comedy.
Yeah.
I think in just general life, Ryan, people misconcept, like, anything you say nowadays, you need to watch your P's and Q's and everything. I think that's just general life. You're scared to say anything. Even you can't, sometimes at work, you can barely crack a joke with people because you don't know how they're going to take it.
I know, yeah. And it's I think Facebook as well has kind of guided that in a way. Because like I'm blocked at the moment from my personal profile for calling myself a cripple. You know what I mean? Just using the word cripple was enough to get me a 28-day ban. You know, Roxy said a name to me about 2 weeks ago with laughy faces, like Yamong child or something like that. It's a phrase we use in Galway. Mm-hmm. But immediately she got a warning. And it's like, you know, you kind of, you know, where do you draw the line? You know, do you go fall on now so you can't use the word like twat or fool, you know, and then do you go beyond that? You know, it's like, come on.
Yeah, definitely. So how did you get into comedy, Steve? What made you get into it?
Completely and utterly accidentally. I was sitting in my car and with my brother about, as I said, 6-7 years ago. And I just asked him to record me doing, I used to always kind of do kind of, well, I'd done loads of characters, but I always used to do one that was a kind of an ignorant farmer that used to take classic rap songs and just do them in a real Irish country version. And that's how it all began. And I had them on my phone for a while and I wasn't going to do nothing with them. And then I threw them up on Facebook and they kind of just took off. And the rest, as they say, is history. Like, it was just insane. And I think then, a lot of in the UK, it was just a lot of people of Irish extraction that were used to seeing them. But then when I started doing a bit more politics about, you know, David Cameron or whatever, and then the Everton as well, especially, then it kind of moved into a more mainstream kind of market, if you will.
That's class. You kind of stumbled dip on it.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I'm an accidental comedian, you know, a serendipitous comedian. I was always the class clown. Don't get me wrong, I was always the messer. Like, but I never thought I'd actually do this as a career. Like, even when the videos started taking off, I had offers in to do shows, and I was like, how would I do that as a show? I'm not. What are you on about? No, like, I'm never going to do this live or whatever. And then it ended up doing it and getting huge audiences in the UK and Ireland. So it was kind of scary how it came about and how it, I suppose, happened.
Yeah, I suppose that's what happens in life sometimes. Things just happen for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've always said, especially with the nature of social media, you could do one sketch and mention the Kardashians in it or Ellen or whatever, and they could retweet it. The next morning, you could be on a flight to America. You know, it's just so instantaneous. Like, you can just be taken out of obscurity and become a huge celebrity. I'm not saying I am. I'd love to be. But what I'm saying is, it's still to this day, that lot it takes to, get huge in America would be someone big sharing one of your videos.
Is that really all it takes then? From, as you say, maybe one video, one wee, even a 30-second clip of somebody who's, as you say, is maybe a celebrity or somebody who's got one of these blue ticks on Twitter, tweets it or retweets it, does your phone just go totally boom, boom?
Oh,
boom.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we had a few big enough, people sharing the videos. And, I suppose you look at the kind of stats and many people, a lot of people watch the videos, but many people might have watched the video, but if you show them a side profile to me or a screenshot of a video shouting, they'll go, oh, yeah, I know that guy. You know what I mean? They might know that you do it all the time. They might think it's a once-off or that. Like I had a lot in the beginning, and then when we started getting bigger again, of people that thought it was actually a real person. So they kind of, I love that. So yeah, it just takes one person to retweet it. And like I was saying, a few well-known people have retweeted them over the years, and it's got interest from different sources and things. So it's good.
I'm not going to lie. I've seen the videos. I thought that was you. And then obviously seeing the other videos, I'm like, he doesn't talk like that. That's the comedy act, that's the actor.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's a testament to the strength of the character that people actually think it's a real accent. Because I think the accent's so ridiculous that how would anyone take it to be real? But then you're thinking, yeah, I know me and I know my voice. When you're only used to hearing that voice, you might go, yeah, that's probably him, you know.
Yeah, it's good. So how did Father Michael come about? What made you bring him as a character?
I suppose, like I was saying, I was always doing kind of stupid kind of comedy raps as a farmer. So the first video I done with my brother, I was Farmer Martin. I was just Martin, and I was talking about just an argument between myself and my neighbor or something. And then I just thought that Michael sounded better. So it just became Michael, and then it just stuck after that. And I suppose he's a kind of an amalgamation of a lot of people I knew growing up when I used to go visit my relatives down the country. You know, it's that kind of thing. You know, it's down in Roscommon and Mayo and stuff. Not in Galway. You wouldn't see that many of them, but it's kind of a very, very countryside kind of fella.
Okay, because I must admit, some of the videos are honestly, mate, they're outstanding. I know you've had millions of views, and it's just that for you personally, it must be a real kick as well, knowing that you're kind of making people laugh and smile, and you're getting a good kind of kick on yourself about it.
Yeah, it's kind of it's weird. When you get messages from famous people that you would have grew up idolizing, and they send you messages and stuff. Like, to get a message from Don French and stuff was just crazy. And certain people like that, and Freddie Flintoff and Gary Lineker and things. Not that now, being an 80s child, Gary Lineker would have been my enemy, you know what I mean, in football terms. But he retweeted my video about the cycle and everything and donated money and everything. So it's kind of mad, And yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, you know, I said it on the Late Late Show that I kind of find it hard sometimes to feel, to experience joy or happiness. So when you know that you might be allowing someone else to experience that, it's a kind of a deflected happiness back on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great that you're saying that comedy and you're getting so well and popular through it. Have you, what sort of celebrities have you met and been, wow, I've just met, say, for instance, Conor McGregor?
Yeah, I suppose he's the most famous person I've met, really. Like, I've met a good few people, but yeah, he would have been the most famous, like, and that kind of came about by accident because he just happened to be in Galway. And loads of people are ringing me going, like, you have to. People are saying you look like him. Or at the beginning, it was the Conor McGregor fella that does the videos, or the fella that looks like McGregor that does the videos. So they said, like, you have to get a picture with him. So we were down there and a former partner of mine went up to him and explained that I use a wheelchair and I'm down in the car. And he came down and he chatted to us, and it was crazy. Like, and all the security around him and everything. And I was like, oh, Jesus, this is weird. But the only regret I have is I didn't ask him to be in a fucking video with me. I was like, shit. Just after it, I was like, you know, but you don't think like.
Yeah. How was he as a person? Was he nice to you and very pleasant?
He was an absolute gent, yeah.
Yeah, really nice.
He's a gent. Actually, a lot of people get, obviously, because of who he is and stuff, they get a perception. But most people these days always judge somebody with one photo or one video or one whatever else. Always judge somebody first, yeah. But until you actually meet them. For me, yeah. Personally, these days you can't judge anybody on one week kind of incident or anything. It's, you've got to ask and meet people first. And as you say, when he speaks to you, he's talking to you like just a normal person. I know he's a big celebrity, but he's had the kind of, he's been nice enough to speak to you as a normal guy. And a lot of people don't really do that in the celebrity world these days.
Yeah,
they kind of just walk past you and turn their nose at you. Which
he could have just ignored her and said like, but no, he ran or pretended he didn't hear her. But he grabbed her by the arm and linked with her and walked down with the security and everything. You know what I mean? Oh, I'll go down to the car. That's cool, you know. So, like, I suppose, but, like, he's controversial. Like, it's his thing to be controversial. He wouldn't be as big as he is today without being controversial. He wouldn't have broken out of the UFC and into other things, you know what I mean? Like, like you have to be controversial to get a chance to fight Floyd Mayweather, for Jesus' sake. You know what I mean? So, like, yeah, so it's crazy.
I seen your video as well about fucking Mayweather's. That was brilliant, I know.
Jesus, that one was just crazy. It was on World Star Hip Hop and everything. Marilyn Wayans and Shaquille O'Neal shared it. Like, you know, it was like, brilliant. What the hell? What the hell's going on? Shaq is sharing my video. You know, it's crazy. Like, and all these people from the African American community, underneath the video going, why do Irish people got their funerals in their kitchens? Not understanding the whole Irish wake thing, you know, and it was ghastly.
See, when you were doing your videos and that, Steve, did you look, were you checking YouTube and stuff all the time to see how many people were viewing it? And just
it was Facebook initially, that was the big one. I threw them on YouTube, but I was getting damn all viewers on YouTube. Twitter, I barely even used. Instagram, I wasn't even on it. So it was Facebook initially. That was the big crowd. And then YouTube only in the last 2 years or so, it started to kind of catch up, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do kind of get, you get obsessed with watching the views and the likes coming in. And when it goes really well, you're elated for the next day or two. And counter to that, and the bad side is you're very down and depressed when it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And you feel really bad and crap. And you kind of, the nature with me, when a video doesn't do good, not only do I feel crap, I feel like packing it all in and deleting my page. Mm-hmm. It gets to that extent, you know. So it's kind of like, so lately when losing like a vast majority of my audience with my page restricted, it's kind of like, it's a knife in the heart, you know.
Especially with lockdown and stuff and not being able to go out and do live shows.
Exactly, yeah. So you want to kind of reach the biggest mass market you can, you know.
Yeah, definitely. It must be hard with lockdown trying to do comedy, as you say, you've had to put your dates and stuff back. Do you feel like you've got so much stuff to give out, but you can't do it all on YouTube or Facebook stuff now?
You can't, like, it's an odd feeling doing the videos these days, because, like I said, like, it's all right for football and politics. Twitter is your go-to for very stereotypical Irishy type of videos. It's definitely YouTube. So I'm gonna, like, I suppose I just have to kind of, I have to plan from now ahead that Facebook is just my fourth or fifth kind of site and just treat it as such and concentrate on Twitter, concentrate on YouTube. Because I was never one of them people that done different videos for different social media channels like a lot of people do. I just stick the same one up. If I put it on Facebook, then I put it on Instagram or whatever. But I suppose like it's time to kind of, I'm lazy too sometimes. So I'd like to do different ones for different platforms. I'm like, fuck that. Just do one video and post it on everything. It looks good, you know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of, but yeah, I need to kind of up my game with regards to TikTok and things like that and newer platforms. But I'm nearly 40, so I'm getting old. TikTok's for children.
Well, see me talk about TikTok, I don't actually view it. I downloaded it after one day. I took it away. I've no interest in it. But is that another avenue for you to kind of advertise and promote your videos as well?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like I remember when I first went on it, I was watching the thing on like CNN or something, and they're on about this huge, basically Chinese social media site. And I said, I'm going to sign up for that for the crack. And I went on it and I was looking for people like I recognized. They didn't exist. There was none of them are on it. Then within a few months, like you had, like I seen Arnold Schwarzenegger was on it and then like Kylie Jenner. And then it just boomed and everyone I know that does sketches or does comedy is on it now. Like I just started re-uploading some of my older videos and I've 80 something thousand followers. So it's not so bad like for something I just threw up my old stuff, you know, but you have to be careful as well on that because keywords and things get you a temporary ban. And
when you're making videos and that, Steve, what's the process of it? Do you need to do so many takes on it to get it specifically right?
It depends on the complexity and the length. Usually, like I'll have an opening line, or I'll have whether Kathleen be opening or me. Then I'm gonna have 3 points that I kind of have to hit. So I had Everton lost. So mention that specific incident, create a fallacy that didn't happen in the match, but that Michael believes did.
Yeah.
And then say something about the position of the league in the league or an upcoming match, and then go out with a closer. Like in a lot of the videos. I never used to have a closer. I had no closing line. I wouldn't go out on it. I'd just laugh or just cry or just whatever, you know what I mean? So, yeah, that would be for the football. Then for the politics ones, they're a bit more complex because you have to make sure you'd look back at it and you go, no, that's coming across as actually racist as opposed to making fun of racists. So you kind of, you'd be like, no, delete that one. We'll do it again, you know? So you have to kind of watch it to see how it comes across because some of them, like, I done the one about, like, Metallica were coming to Slane in Ireland. And I didn't even enjoy doing the video. I was, like, just pretending to be James Hetfield going, like, yeah. And, like, that went up on a lot of sites on social media. And I think it's my largest viewed on Facebook, like, 20 million or something. I didn't even like the video. And I didn't particularly like watching it even when it went viral. I was kind of like, I don't like that. It's not even funny. But you just threw it up because you had to stay ahead of current events, you know, Metallica are coming to Ireland, you have to do a video about it.
Is that something that you always, as you say, is if something happens, do you think, like, I now need to act in that and do a video as soon as it happens, or do you just wait and obviously process other things that go on and try and do it in a 2 or 3 minute video?
Oh, yeah, sometimes, like we've always said that once, if a big news story breaks, you have to be in there quick with a video. You have to do it really, really fast. You have to basically get up out of bed if you're watching TV at night. Get into the car, do a video, come up with a sketch in the top of your head really, really fast. Right, something happened to Trump, blah, 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 blah. What's about Trump, blah, blah, mention something else then confuse him with someone and then get Michael going off on a rant about something else completely, entirely, and just get it up there. So you do feel pressure to come up with material in seconds. You know, sometimes I'd be just like looking on my phone on a news app and then I'd be like, oh God, that's just happened. Have to do a sketch immediately. So you're under pressure. And then like you've always the counter to that, like you'd be like, oh, why didn't I say this a few minutes after you posted it? You know, or someone will say something on Twitter going, it would be cool if you mentioned, and I'm like, fuck yeah, you know. So it's because, you know, when you're doing my videos, like it all happened. It was very music orientated and very farmery kind of Irish stuff. And then people used to start asking, like, what's Michael's opinion on X, Y, and Z? So that's why we started doing the more kind of current affairs and political topical ones then. Because people were saying, I'd love to know what Michael would think of this. Mm-hmm. So we started doing them. So it's almost these days, like, if... But you know yourself, you can't talk about something when it's past. It,
yeah.
News stories have their half-life and they're gone and dusted. Like, if I done a video now about Luxembourg beating Ireland, no, who would want to watch it? Like, it's dead in water. It's gone. Mm-hmm. Last week's news. You know, you have to get it out quick.
So you're on 24/7, really, to check the news and check things that's going on and make sure that you're on your game?
Yeah. The last while now, I've kind of slowed down on the videos a bit. As I said, I'm kind of like stepping away from it. I'm just kind of regrouping myself, I think, and regrouping the way I do it. And should I introduce another character or should I change it entirely what I do? Mm-hmm. But I know people had missed Michael and I kind of miss doing Michael as well, you know, so it's kind of can't really get rid of him, but maybe just start developing other characters around him too.
No, because I must admit, it's outstanding. It's just, I find it interesting talking to us, normal accent, brilliant, but then it's just, boom, it's the character comes in. And I find it very interesting how you do that. For me, that's why I think people like comedy as well, because you can just transform who you are within a 2 or 3 second video. And people, as you say, people think that's the way you talk. But I did.
I think I put a lot of emphasis into the mannerisms of the character. So like when I start doing Michael straight away, the hand almost goes stiff and I stiffen up because he's meant to be old and I'm more hunched over and you feel angry. There's anger that like boils up from your inner push down subconsciousness. So you almost get kind of like, and it's weird as well, Michael, if you look at some of the older videos and then the older videos, the accent has changed so like drastically over the years. And I didn't even notice it happen. And a lot of the kind of more modern ones, it's just kind of me screaming more so than anything else. Cause I don't know how that happened. Like the early Michael, he never shouted or screamed. He was very kind of, he'd go, what? I don't know, I wouldn't know about that. You know, he was a bit more set down and the voice was a bit deeper and more kind of country like that. And then I kind of just went that fucking mad kind of one. And I think it's because just one or two videos people liked. I think the 29 years Kathleen one as well, when Galway won the hurling in Ireland, and everyone could relate to it because they felt the elation of their team winning after so long. And when the wife goes, what about our wedding day? Ah, fuck you in the wedding day. You know what I mean? The kids were born. Ah, then kids are only, you know, fuck off back to Waterford. Do you know what I mean? It's just that elation of your team winning. Like, I know Celtic fans wouldn't have any idea about winning lately, but we leave that aside. Yeah.
But it's just brilliant, like, how you can transform into that character. And you see how your body goes into the old farmer, the farmer kind of act. I think it's brilliant how, again, it's brilliant how you kind of do it all the time, because as Robert says, it's, and you said as well, it's basically a full-time job. You're having to look at the news, you're having to kind of go, right, what's in fashion, what's in the media, so I can do it. And again, that is really brilliant. I don't, a lot of people understand that. They don't understand, obviously, what it takes to, right, I need to go to my bed, I need to do this. They just think you're sitting a card on a video, and it's a lot.
Yeah, they just think, like, you know, he gets a thought into his head and your one turns on the phone and that's it. And I suppose they don't kind of see that there's got to get a lot of behind the scenes stuff. And it becomes an obsession. Like, it kind of grabbed hold of me for a long time, where everything that happened, all you're thinking about is the possible outcome for a video. Like watching an Everton match, all you're thinking of is the three possibilities. And the three possibilities are, what angle will I take if it's a win? What angle will I take if it's a loss? What angle will I take if it's a draw? If it's a draw, unless it's what against one of the big sides, you usually leave it and you don't do a video on it. But like at one stage, I was doing a video pre-match and then post-match. And it almost takes you over, because you can't enjoy the little things anymore. Because the pleasure from little things are stolen from you, because you got the new pleasure of watching the video go really big or do very well. And that took over. But as I was saying, the counter to that is then watching a video doing really poorly. So it kind of takes over your life as well in that sense that you can't even watch the news or something that big in entertainment without having to formulate a video around that subject.
See what you're saying on that, Steve. Just, you're very similar to me and Ryan, how we started the podcast. We've done it for a bit of fun, but then we started getting into it. Now we're trying to make it bigger. We're trying to get down different avenues, like get your sale and stuff on and try to get bigger people on all the time. And what you're saying is me and Ryan work full time as well, but we're all thinking about the podcast. We're always coming up with ideas. We're trying to make it bigger, better all the time. And just very similar to what you're saying, we can relate to you in that sense, not in the scale you're on, but just how it becomes an obsession that you want to
You put everything about yourself into that. So then if that's not doing good, that means you're not doing good as a person. And if that's doing good, it makes me feel fulfilled. So it's kind of, it's a weird kind of way of attaining joy, because it's not in the long term achievable, because nothing lasts forever. You know what I mean? I've always thought, like, when do I say enough is enough and cut the character and stop doing this? And you kind of think to yourself, maybe it is time to do that. And then you're kind of like, but then what'll I do now? You know, does that mean it's, you know, you're kind of like, do I keep flogging a dead horse and keep doing it, you know, in years to come when the videos start getting less views? What do I do then? And you're kind of like, you're always worrying about the future and what to do and what'll happen.
It's definitely as Robert says here, Stephen. Again, I agree with the two of you, what you're saying. We've started to just, I'm getting obsessive now when it comes to, like, I'm obviously a big Celtic fan. I'm sitting with a notepad writing about the game and who's playing well. What can I say, Robert, the podcast? Who can I say to the guest, the podcast?
Yeah.
What can we speak about? And you're not really watching the game as a fan now. You're watching it as a podcaster. And
And you're watching it for material.
Aye, and obviously I'm happy with winning. When we get beat, I'm like, right, okay, we'll get beat. It's not very good, but it's good to speak about the podcast because it will be a good half an hour, 45 or even an hour podcast for us to speak about. And I think it's maybe the same yourself when you get a good kind of storyline. It gives you a good video to put out there for the public.
Yeah. So it kind of steals the joy out of something you would have got joy out of before.
Yeah,
and especially with Celtic knowing well and over. Effing and queuing every 5 minutes, so
yeah. They'd really suck the joy out of you.
Especially we're going for, obviously the Magic 10. It's failed, so it's been good for us now in the podcast as well, like you were saying, because we've got a lot to speak about, and obviously some people go on a podcast, you know, it must be like, right, what are we going to talk about?
I remember at the start of the season, like, everyone was just like, yeah. Yeah, Celtic are going to run away with it. They've already started.
I'm not going to lie. I said it was an absolute certainty, and I've got egg in my face now. So,
yeah.
But sometimes you take a step back, Steve, to go too forward, and I think this season's just been a reality check for most of us.
Yeah. Not to take things for granted.
Yeah, exactly, mate. Exactly. So, you're a big supporter of Ireland. How do you feel on there? The way they've been just now?
They have been crap, obviously. But, like, I know it sounds counterintuitive, but they're playing better football in a way. You know, and he has a lot of young fellas coming up. And, you know, we don't have the best of a squad. We don't have the best of players. And it's hard to achieve anything with that. So, like, you know, the thing I was saying the last day to my dad, I was saying, like, look, throw away qualification hopes and let's just use this qualification period as basically a load of friendlies to try and get. But then the counter to that then is that you slip down in the rankings and the coefficient, and that can make qualification harder the next time around. But yeah, it's sad to see, because I think it's their worst run of games since 67, 71, when they were like disastrous. But back in that time, they didn't play any nation ranked lower than them, or any nation with a smaller population, I think I read somewhere. So this is probably the worst run in the history of the team, which is depressing.
So you reckon it's a transitional period with Ireland just now?
Well, my God, I'd hope so. I'd hope so. Like, Because I'm a child in 1994 and 2002, you know. So looking back at them years and seeing it now, it's depressing. So I hope to God it's a transition, and I hope something can be built up, and I hope, you know, a lot of young new prospects with good futures come through.
You see, obviously, you're talking about Ireland.
We had a soft spot for Ireland because my family's Boyle, so we're from Ireland originally. Obviously,
an Irish name.
So we are from Ireland originally. So at home, we always watched Ireland in the World Cups and the European Championships. And I'll tell you a funny story, but I'll not tell you the full story to it. So my sister had a boyfriend who was a Rangers supporter in Ireland. Do you remember played Spain and they missed the two penalties?
Yeah.
So I was lying in my bed hungover, and my sister's boyfriend came in at the time and he says, "Get it up, you bastards." And then my dad heard it from the living room, arsed and nicked him up the hall and out the door because he was saying Ireland missed a penalty. My dad says, "You're lucky you're my daughter's boyfriend, and I kicked your head in." He got launched in the house.
I would have kicked his head in anyway.
Yeah, he's deserved a kick in the head, to be honest with you. So that was a funny story on supporting Ireland.
Yeah, I remember those days of just watching the matches and going out and during the half-time and kicking around a ball, and the outfield shouting me in, "The match is back on again," and the Paddy Bonner save, and it was crazy. Every house and every estate had flags, bunting, everything. It was cars going around beeping horns, boys sitting up in the roofs with flags and everything. It was just insane. Because first time in it, and we so nearly got to the semis, you know, like it could have been the shock of world football. You know what I mean? It wasn't, but to the fans, it was still the biggest thing ever. We nearly got to the semis for the first time ever being in it. You know what I mean? I think we rose to sixth in the world rankings. We qualified the next time for 94 and beat Italy. Like, it was revenge for the E knocking us out the year before, you know? So it was like, Jesus Christ, did this just happen? We went to, you know, USA 94 and we're after beating Italy now, you know? We came out of no place, and now we have a rivalry with the maestros of world football. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's good memories.
Yeah,
because obviously you mentioned Ireland as well. We've got obviously Shane Duff at Celtic at the moment, and obviously he's not been that good for us this season. We thought it was going to be a really good signing for us. Are you a bit shocked yourself how kind of poor he's been?
Yeah, definitely. I'm kind of, you know, I'm shocked as well at the amount of flack and crap he's been getting too, though. You know, it's not going to help improve his situation. Like, you know what I mean? It's not. It's going to make him doubt himself as a footballer, going to make him doubt his levels of skill, going to make him doubt everything. You know, like, you know, I know it's, you know, people are going to say it's at the top level of football. It's just, you can't do that. Once you stop playing well, you're gone. Look at Keane and Man United, gone. You know, you're gone. Once your time is there, you've given your chance, you don't shine. That's the nature of football. But, like, I suppose, like, with all this kind of being more mental health aware and things, like, we often think footballers are just immune to this and would never be affected by the criticism. But we have to kind of pull back and say, look, it's a game at the end of the fucking day. And that's a lad that, you know, is definitely not feeling the best about his own abilities at the moment.
See, that's something we've kind of spoken about, obviously, because I'm doing this now. We've had a few kind of footballers on and kind of other people who have obviously taught me mental health, and it's quite a big thing for me as well, because I've kind of had bits of it myself. So you speak about it, you're playing football, and you realise, we spoke to an ex-Celtic player, he was a youth player, and he basically says people don't realise if you're not really doing well off the park, it affects you big time on the park. He says if you have a row with your missus in the morning in a game and you play shite, that's not because you've had a bad game, it's because it's stuff that's affecting you. He says, and they don't realise fans think because you're paying £30 and you're getting 10 grand a week that you've got to play well every week and everything's got to be perfect. But you realise, as you said, you take a step back, you need to think, whatever you write on Twitter before you write it, Facebook, remember they've got families and they've got this and that. So you need to remember, as you says, to some fans, it's not a game, it's a life. But when you take a step back for 90 minutes, I maybe say you're effing this or that, but that's it. And then obviously you talk about it, aye, maybe he's going to do better. But as you say, there's certain things you need to rein back in and think, wait a minute, be a bit more kind of sensitive to what you're saying.
Yeah, like they're human too, and as you were saying there, a lot of them have families and stuff, and a lot of, you know, like they have to juggle that, and it's not easy with the amount of training and the amount of, you know, work that's involved to do that. And it's, you know, people have bad days in all walks of life. You know, it's just the nature of us. We're not always perfect. Like a monkey will fall out of a tree. He's not always going to grab the branch. Mm-hmm. We always seem to think animals are like, we're, you know, we always have this thing with animals as well. Like the cheetah never trips and falls. He does. The monkey falls out of the tree. You know, animals make mistakes too. You know what I mean? We do. You know, it's just, it's the nature of being a human, being a mammal. We make mistakes.
Because I think it's something we've obviously, we're kind of trying to touch on it as well. Obviously, it's a Celtic podcast and whatever else. But as Robert says, we're trying to touch on different avenues, obviously with mental health and anything else we can kind of, can I get out there and get, if anybody needs support or even just a chat in general, even if it's just about anything, because we know these days a lot of things are kind of restricted. And obviously, as you say here, people have got families and maybe they can't speak to families. So yeah, it's something that's got to be, as we've spoken about, especially in Scotland, I don't know what it's like in Ireland, but it's got to, it's really got to kind of mention a lot more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, we have come a long way in the last, like, 2-3 years in regards to mental health awareness. We're a lot more, even on Twitter, I see it, like, there's a lot less vitriol and attacks and things. There can be, like, I know for myself, they come out of the woodwork now and again when I say something, but I do go out of my way to attack certain groups, but that's because I despise their existence. That wouldn't be a football thing now. That'd be like far right people in Ireland that I go out of my way to. I kind of go out of my way to put myself in their target, you know, in their target lines. But at the same time, when you have a platform, I feel a moral imperative to kind of speak out about these things. So you feel like you should be doing it, you know. So yeah, I got a bit of flack over that, but you don't really mind that. Like, you know, I put a thing up on Facebook and a load of people unfollowed me, and I'm kind of like, what does it matter? What's the grand scale of things? What does a few hundred people that follow you unliking you mean to you? Mm-hmm. You know, because too long I've kind of judged my value as a person by your social media stats, because with the job I do, that is my value of a person and that is what I'm worth. Like, how many subscribers do you have? So it's not like, yeah, are you a good person? Do you look after your family? Do you blah, blah, blah? It's like, how many subscribers do you have? You know, it's how many people attended your last show? You know, what's your average ticket selling price? How much is your merchandise? Blah, blah, blah. You become a figure, and that becomes your value, as opposed to being your value being you and what you do outside of like Farm and Michael or whatever else, you know.
I think it's definitely what you're saying is correct. I think in general life, Robert, I think it's definitely, as Steve says, it's maybe people aren't kind of, they're not really being as angry towards a lot of stuff now, but sometimes people, as Steve says, sometimes need to rein it a wee bit.
Yeah, you've got to remember that Shane Duffy's dad passed away as well, so
yeah,
you know what I mean? There's a lot going on behind the scenes that people don't understand. They just see it. He's not playing well. He's no time for the jersey. It's,
yeah,
there's more life now than out with football, and people have got to understand that, especially with COVID times and everything else. I mean, mental health and everything else that goes on in the world, it's just, we've got to realise the bigger picture now than just focus on one thing.
Oh, definitely. Like, you don't just come back a week later from, or 2 weeks later from your dad dying. You know, you don't just, you know, we seem to think like, sure, that's enough time now, we should be grand, you know. But if it was us, then we'd be like, complaining all the time, you know. It's like, as the saying, walking a mile in a fella's shoes, you know.
Yeah, and another thing, Steve, is everybody does everything different. There's no right or wrong way how to get
it. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It takes 2-3 years in one person, it could take 2 months in another person, so we've got
absolutely. It's the same with anything. It's the same with anything, really, you know. We're different.
Yeah. And on a more positive note, you'll be happy with how Ancelotti's doing at Everton now.
Yeah. I was more so up until the last few games, I suppose. We had a chance to kind of bolster ourselves up there, but you know, we're still doing good in the grand scheme of things. Like, if we can get the, I just worry even against Crystal Palace on Monday. I kind of have this like, it's Everton, you know, that we'll throw to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get so near and then you draw with Newcastle or something and you're like, oh, Jesus, that's, you know what I mean? You had it like, you know, you can have 99% of the possession but still lose 2-1. You know what I mean? It's kind of, you know, you have the opportunity there. Like, you know, just get the 3 points Monday, you know, focus.
Because I think like,
even any sort of European spot would be incredible, you know.
No, definitely. Especially, I think that's kind of, I've seen obviously Scottish football and English football, the golf and money is different. But Everton, they've spent a good bit of money, but I think they've spent it wisely in getting Ancelotti in. It's a very, very shrewd move because for me, he's one of the top managers in the world. So I think it might take him maybe a year or two more, but I think he's definitely going to do good things with Everton.
Oh, yeah, they're improving vastly. Like, and they're holding the ball better. They're playing better football. You know, it's not, you know, Everton were always seen as the kind of, you know, almost the dogged, kind of rough kind of side of the Premiership. And now there's this flair and this class, you know, and you want to see that too. You want to, obviously, you'll take a Premier League title if there's no flair. Who gives a shit? But it's nice to see that as well when you're watching. It's nice to see proper football. And like he's a great manager. And with the stadium news and everything, it's just, you know, and like I was saying there like a while ago about, I think, a video topic straight away. The first thing that came into my mind when I said like any sort of Europe spot would be great. It's like Michael pulling the piss out of the name, the imperceptible, impronounceable names of foreign teams. You know what I mean?
Again, as you say, if you're in Europe and it's with your team doing well and qualifying, it's, as you say, it's giving you material to cross shit. Like, I'll do this now. I'll do this. And again, it's always, you're always on the kind of lookout for kind of material to do. Yeah.
You're always on, really.
Because I think it's, again, as it's the same as us, we're looking at Celtic. Right? That was terrible, market down, right? Podcast. You'd always, obviously, as Robert says, we're known the kind of larger scale as yourself, but it's just, it's always good to look at a different kind of aspect.
Yeah, yeah. It's like I was saying, it kind of zaps the enjoyment out of it, you know, because it's more like you're watching it for work. Mm-hmm. Like when you were a kid and you had to watch a certain thing for school to do something on, you didn't really want to watch it because you had to do it. So it becomes a chore as opposed to a thing that you love.
Aye, and I know, but you're looking at Everton and you're trying to look at players we can sign, and I'm like, people are probably not listening to you, but it's good to kind of broaden your knowledge as well.
Yeah.
What's your opinion, Steve, on the Celtic situation in Ireland and stuff, and like over in Ireland, what's the people's opinion on it? Obviously, they've lost 10 now, but is there quite a big following where you're from in Ireland on Celtic?
Oh, there would be, yeah, there'd be more so before when they were successful, ironically enough, and when they were in Europe all the time, you would always see people with the Celtic shirts, and now less so. But it's kind of the nature of a lot of fans over here in Ireland. They jump on the bandwagon when a team is doing well. Like, you know what I mean? I know for a fact that if Man United went down into the first division in 93 or whatever and stayed down there, you would not have the amount of Man United fans you have now. Like, we used to have loads of Forest fans. We used to have loads of Leeds fans. They're practically disappeared now. They'll start coming out now that Leeds are back. You know what I mean? So it's just, because people want to watch Premiership football, and if your team doesn't happen to get in that, they'll end up jumping on some other bandwagon. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of fans are like that. Yeah, there's the hardcore element as well, like, but there are a lot that kind of would have jumped on Celtic, especially when they were in European games.
Mm-hmm. Is that with Brendan Rodgers and stuff as well? Yeah.
Because I think it was the same as back here, Steve, when obviously there's a, the season books wasn't as full, and then as soon as Brendan Rodgers came, everybody was buying tickets, and as you say, people were all out with the flags, or Celtic this, Celtic that. Now this season, some fans are saying, oh, I might not review it again, then obviously everyone's Eddie Howe came in, and then fans are all excited again. So as you say, just swinging roundabouts.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of it as well is just people kind of, I suppose it's less visible because the team aren't doing well. You're not going to see too many people out with their jersey on because they're not going into the pub to watch the match too at the same time.
I think that's what we're all missing, Robert, go to the pub.
Yeah.
The games more than it and I, and then going for a beer, I suppose. Yeah, that's definitely it. But hopefully there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, Jesus, it's time to live again, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, Steve.
And obviously your
top dates like for Glasgow and stuff, Steve.
Say that again.
Have you any upcoming dates for Glasgow in 2022?
That's all fair. The last time we were there was, I think we were there in 2019. We were at Cottiers, I think. Cottiers Theatre.
Cottiers Theatre. Where's that, Ryan? Do you know where that is?
I've heard it, but I can't remember where it is.
Yeah, that's where it was. Mm-hmm. It was insane. It was brilliant. Yeah. It was gas because there was a few Rangers fans in as well, which made it all the better. And some woman came up on the stage and she was pissed and she fell over. So that was like, we're definitely in Glasgow now.
Yeah, good. Hopefully me and Ryan can get to see you.
Definitely. Have you any kind of, obviously you've got a tour next year. What's the kind of, as you say, future plans, maybe new characters? Have you any more dates to add on as well with your tour, or is it just kind of played by year?
We'll be adding a few more dates to the Irish tour, and then we'll see how the position is progressing in the UK, whether we'll do London and Glasgow and Liverpool and things like that. So hopefully, maybe if all goes well, the autumn sometime, but mm-hmm. I'm not jumping the gun on it yet because you don't want to waste all your effort and energy into plugging something that's not going to happen. You know what I mean? Because you'll be only disappointed even more so then.
It's very hard. Is it? You know, to plan anything, holidays or anything, you can't really plan anything. It must be hard for yourself to, as you say, to plan anything, because you're like, if I could plan something, I could put tickets out next week, but then 3 weeks later we're back in lockdown, so you're like, it's very hard to judge it.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than not being in control of a situation, given I'm a bit of a control freak anyway when it comes to organising the tours and gigs. I like to do it myself and keep an eye on how many tickets is blah blah for X, Y, Z city and things. So when that's taken out of your hands and you can't even like think about even starting a tour, it's kind of like,
But it's I think in general life, Robert, isn't it? It's very hard. It must be hard, obviously it's hard for us, but it must be harder for Steve Ashley's job to actually plan. And it must be really hard to actually think, like, when am I going to start doing this again? Because for us, it's hard to actually go to work, when we go to work again, or when we go to do this. But that's his full-time job, and that must, as well as Steve says, it's kind of like it takes a full of your life.
Definitely, Ryan, especially comedy, because comedy, as Steve says, it could be a short span of how many people enjoy your comedy and your sketches, because he needs to look for new material constantly, whereas we go to work, we know exactly what we're doing. Steve's job is completely different for us. He's got to think on the ball all the time, and if he's maybe got a tour date in 2 years' time, what he was going to do, he might think, oh no, what if people don't like that now? Mm-hmm. What if I need to change it all back? So it must be really, really hard, Steve, in that sense.
Yeah, you're kind of always worried about the future. And like I was saying, you're always worried, like, is the love for what I do gone now? And do I have to go back to the drawing board and start with a new one, even though people will hate it? And then with the new character, do you hope that he'll catch on, and how long do you give the new character until you go, right, that's not working? You know what I mean? How long do you test it? Because like Michael, a few of the videos took off, but a lot of them were low thousands of views and stuff, but it still managed to take off after a while. But you never know, you know, we're in a different climate now, in a different kind of situation, different environment. So you're kind of like, you know, I suppose, yeah, it's kind of, it's a weird situation, because people seem to think, because of what you do and you're on telly and stuff and all this, that you're a multimillionaire. And like, you're kind of like, no, all I'm making now is the money from YouTube, which is damn all, because a lot of my videos are unmonetized. So that's what I'm living on now. Like, and people think you're loaded, which is always the misconception. How much do you get from Facebook? How much do you get from this? And you're like, nothing. How much did you get when you're on the Late Late Show? And you're like, zero. How much do you know what I mean? So you're, people kind of even don't believe you when you say that to them, because they're like, but what? And you're like, yeah, that's like, I wouldn't be touring otherwise. You make money from the shows, you know.
And they think they're going to be minty because you get millions of views, and they think that it's all hunky dory and that side.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I don't know, but it's interesting that he says that, because I think that's just in general life. People think because you're a footballer that you're absolutely full of money and you've got no issues. The same with Steve, he's a funny guy, he's got money, and again, it's not like that.
Yeah.
No, that's the impression people give it. As they say, Steve, they see Steve all over YouTube, Twitter. Oh, that guy must be absolutely raking it in. But he can't do his tour dates.
Well, you disappeared. That's all right. No, but I can definitely understand what Rob was going to say there. It's hard for kind of people think because you're doing YouTube and you're doing that, that as you mentioned, everything's all brilliant and they don't
when you're
see...
visible, mm-hmm. when you're visible, you're seeing so much that oh you must be loaded. Why else would you be doing it? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I just started doing it for the crack and I kind of continued and then it became my kind of job, but you know, I like doing it as well at the same time. You know what I mean?
Plus, especially during lockdown, it's giving you more things to think about as well. Because obviously a lot of people are, as you say, people are maybe struggling mental health or they can't really do much, but you're always kind of on the go thinking, right, this pops up, I'll do this. And again, I think that's maybe a good thing in comedy. There's always something to pop up for you to do.
Yeah, there's always like, you know, I suppose the possibilities are endless as long as you kind of channel them and as long as you jump on them. You know, I've other characters as well, and I kind of messed around with them. Like, I do a lot of different ones as well. That I probably, because some fans might see everything I post, so they only think, oh, Michael, that's it. And like, so you're kind of like, you know, the relative success, but you're kind of, you're thinking like, right, do I need to step back to the drawing board and come up with another character? But see, I was going to do Michael because you ape what you know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You ape what you kind of grew up with and listening to farmers down at our granny's house years ago. So you're kind of aping that. So you want to be able to pull off the character as authentically as possible, you know?
Aye, but it's, honestly, your videos are brilliant and the farmer Michael was... It's brilliant. I think a lot of people can react to it as well. And obviously the one you put up the other day with the Easter was honestly, it was comical. I know it might not be PC, but it was honestly, I was in stitches. And I don't know a lot of people in Scotland that actually know about it, but people I speak to, obviously a few people I know saying, oh, I've got Steve on the podcast or like that. We don't know, and then I say, guy does the videos, and I show, oh, him now, so they understand who he is. And they kind of go, ah, oh, he's brilliant. I'm like, I know, you should watch it more often because it's brilliant.
Yeah, I get that a lot, really. Like, a lot of people tell me, like, they'll be there, like, they'll say Steve O'Timothy and be like, who? Never, I've never heard of him. And then you go, like, the farmer Michael fell, and they go, oh, yeah, or this short picture, like, oh, yeah, I've been watching him for years, but they just don't know me because they'll only maybe watch it on YouTube or whatever. So they don't know who the hell I am, you know what I mean, as an individual.
And they don't know the actual person yourself, it's a character they know.
Yeah. And you tell them then that you, like, you know, that you get very anxious and that you don't like going out much, and they'll be like, fuck off. They don't believe you. Like, they really don't believe you. Mm. Like, they kind of think, oh, that fella'd be great crack. I'd say he'd go into the middle of Air Square in Galway and start doing pranks and stuff, and you're there the furthest. Like, I get embarrassed when someone asks me to do the voice. I feel pressured into it and I kind of tend to not do it, but I'll always stand for a selfie and stuff. I'll always you know, say hello to someone, but I just, when it comes to, I kind of don't like performing it out in public, mm-hmm. unless it's a gig, you know?
How's it been that people getting selfies and stuff? Has that been a kind of bit of a whirlwind?
It's kind of mad, yeah. You get so many people that, like, you wouldn't expect. Like, I get a lot of older people because they think it's gas because they remind me of their dad or whatever. But that's kind of cross-cultural as well. You get a lot, like, in America as well, like, even African-American community, they'd have an uncle that'd be like Michael. You know, that's, it's the backward kind of uncle or granddad. He is backward, but he's swears he's right with everything. He knows everything and everyone else is wrong. You know what I mean? And he's trapped. He's like a 60s farmer brought into the modern age. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's weird when people come over and kind of very posh people as well. My daughter lives in New York and absolutely loves the videos. Quick message to Sarah. She's studying law, and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, cool. You know, so yeah, it's weird.
It just shows you as well kind of how far it is maybe getting, like the reach you're getting.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Like, you know, you kind of always, I suppose, like, you become so used to it that you almost take it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be enjoying it because there will be a time when that doesn't happen anymore and no one will want yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, no one will have any interest in getting a selfie with you, which is sad to say, but, you know, that's...
But I totally get that. It's definitely true. As you say, 1 minute your videos are booming, next minute they're doing, next minute you get selfies. Now, you know, it is a bit like, oh, why is this all of a sudden stop? But as you say, things happen and things don't always continue the way they are.
Yeah, and it's like the same with many footballers as well that wouldn't have been massively known but are big in their day because they're with a big club. They might be a defender or something. And they turn to alcoholism and drugs and stuff because they lose that rush of going out onto the pitch. They lose that rush of people recognising them and the kids idolising them and wanting their signature and wanting a selfie with them. And then when you no longer have that, it's kind of like, what do I do now, life? You know, is this it? You know? And it's the same kind as well, because you've been limited. It's the same kind of thing, because you've been limited lifespan in football.
Mm-hmm. That's true, aye. And I think it's...
They just make a bit more money.
It's true what you say, that sometimes they feel... Because obviously a lot of footballers haven't got maybe a trade or they've not got something else behind them. And then after football, as you say, it's like, what else can I do now? And I think maybe
articles are going to punditry, but that's very... Not every footballer can do that. There'd be too many pundits, you know, so that's limited as well. Like.
And I think Moore's got... See, I don't know the ins and outs of when it's like in Ireland or even in England with the PFA, but I think they've maybe got to do more to help these guys outside when they actually finish football.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, they do a lot with younger players nowadays when they come through the ranks and start earning huge money to, like, help them and, you know, not to let it go to their head and them to, like, you know, buy a Lambo and crash drink driving or whatever. But I think more needs to be done coming out the other side as well. You almost need to be debriefed to go back into civilian life.
No, I think that's totally spot on, mate, because as you say, they're in a bubble. They're in football, then they're maybe going nights out. They're in this world when they're just a bubble of football. And then, as you say, they leave that bubble and it's just a big, bad world out there. And you're not really the superstar anymore. So you're having to deal with general life now. You're a family man.
Yeah.
You need to go and get a job. And then, again, that's when the mental health side comes in. That can affect the people a lot, even though they've got all this money. But as we all know, money's no everything in life.
Yeah, like you're basically retiring at 36, 37, 38, 39. You know what I mean? And there's a long, long life after that yet. And if you have to, you know, if you have to deal, if you're self-medicating or dealing with your depression wrongly or get depression in the first place, that's a long time to deal with that.
Definitely. And I think it's something... I don't know how much the footballers actually get help, but I think it's maybe something, again, as you say, when they retire, they don't really think about how much it's going to affect these people with football. I think in general, any kind of celebrity, maybe even like yourself, when you stop kind of doing comedy, thinking, what am I going to do now? There's other guys in maybe like America and stuff, all these celebrities who are not really big anymore, and they might have that kind of world when they're out the bubble, and you're thinking, what else do I do? Like yourself, you're looking at videos, you're doing this, and then when you stop doing videos, you're like, what am I going to do now?
But is
that something you've kind of thought about, or do you just continue to just do comedy, and then when it happens, it happens?
I think about it, I think about it a lot more lately, I think, with all the lockdown and everything that's happened in my personal life. You think about that a bit more, and you think about, like, you know, should I just, like... It's almost like it kind of eats at you, and you're like, I need to grow up and, like, cop on and, you know, just stop this silliness. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of that way. And then the negative voices from, you know, certain social media comments and things do, you know, get to you more because you're more vulnerable yourself. So it's times like them when you're sitting back thinking and guessing about life, that's when them comments kind of really, you know, stick you to the wall.
It's definitely... something I think in general it's good to be looked at when these guys retire, and obviously celebrities, people, as you say, because they're these big people, that everything's going to be okay, and everything isn't always okay, especially I think maybe sometimes it affects people when they are bigger than maybe people who are maybe not as well off, because they've had that joy and then they're going for boom back down again. And I think it's a big, as you say, it's a big whirlwind going from the top to the bottom.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But I think hopefully as the mental health side can obviously outside the lockdown it can get better, and I think it is getting better when it comes to that. But again, Steve, I'm really glad you've come on. I really appreciate your time. Robert's party died there, so that's in my way. But again, honestly, I hope family lives continue to go well. The tour.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to, hopefully, if we do get in Glasgow, we'll try and get there. Even Ireland, me and Robert, I've teased Robert, we might even try and go over, mate. Again, your stuff's brilliant. Continue to be yourself, mate. And thanks for coming on, and I really appreciate it. And take care.
Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, Steve. Cheers. Cheerio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.